From KUT News and the Texas Tribune, this is The Ticket.
We demand our liberty.
You and I know that America deserves better.
Americans have come back from some pretty tough economic times.
Crony capitalism is indeed alive and well.
And we are going to make our country great again.
I'm Ben Philpott.
And I'm Jay Root.
This week on the show, immigration policy had a moment in the spotlight at the second GOP debate. So this week, we're going to take a deeper dive on the issue.
And since this is a debate largely playing out in the Republican Party, we'll talk with Tea Party activist Katrina Pearson about which direction she'd like to see her party move.
And on the straight ticket, Jeb Bush goes out on an immigration limb. But first, Jay, last week we said goodbye to Rick Perry. This week it's Scott Walker, who, again, I'd like to point out, I said Scott Walker would be the next person to drop out at the live event last week, although I think you agreed.
But. Kudos to you. But I'll have to say, and I was wrong in my previous podcast and also in just what I was thinking going into this presidential race. I really thought Scott Walker was I have a text that I sent to a friend, and I said, I think I've got my eyes on Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, and Ted Cruz. And I was completely wrong about Scott Walker, and I may be wrong about Jeb Bush too.
Yeah, right.
I do think, though, that Ted Cruz, I think strategically, tactically, has got something going on here, because Donald Trump is, you know, he's possibly fading here.
We assume he has a shelf life.
His polls are going down, and Carly's coming up. But I think all of these outsider candidates are going to fade. I really do. I think that Carly and Donald Trump and Ben Carson, just like the outsiders did in the 2012 race, like Herman Cain did, you know, they come up and then they go down. And I think that there's the flavor of the month sort of phenomenon going on. And Ted Cruz will be the outsider, angry conservative that pulls their support.
Well, you know, Walker, though, it was very interesting. He seemed to have a little bit of everything for the Republican field. You know, no matter what little section of the Republican Party you might consider yourself to be in, he seemed to have a little something for you. You know, he busted the unions. He was a red governor in a purple to blue state. He had some Tea Party credentials. He had a little bit of everything. But, you know, I think, as I said last week at our debate watching party, I think that because he had a little bit of everything, there were candidates out there in this gigantic Republican field that people could match their likes with, who just came off with more charisma. And so he just, you know, he knew a little about a lot and couldn't make any of that, couldn't make the argument for any of it very passionately at all.
I think similar dynamics with Rick Perry, that, you know, he was seen as somebody who could maybe meld the social conservatives with the fiscal conservatives. But you're right. I mean, if you're sort of all things to everybody, you end up being having nothing for, you know, you're man without country sort of phenomenon.
You know, you were talking about whether or not you may be right on Jeb Bush or wrong on Jeb Bush. I guess that if he really started to tank, this would be the most expensive flop since like Waterworld, I think, with his over $100 million that he's got in the bank on the super PACs. Although it is interesting, you know, we've talked a lot about super PAC money being very important. Walker had a pretty healthy super PAC. He drops out. Yeah. Rick Perry had a pretty healthy super PAC, although he had absolutely no money on the other side, the actual campaign money.
Well, you know, stuff like ballot access, can't pay for that with a super PAC.
Yeah.
Staff, you know, in these states that you can order around, you can't pay for that with a super PAC. So, yeah. Super PACs are great, but you've got to have real money too. I think that's been one of the most interesting developments that we've seen in these first two withdrawals.
Yeah,
who's going to be next?
Oh God, who's going to be next? Well, of the big debate stage, I mean, you know, Walker, one of the things he did was he called out the baby debate stage, the B team stage, and said essentially, y'all just need to drop out. So that's, you know, Jindal and Pataki and who's the fourth?
Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham. You know, I think any of those could decide at any given time, I guess, to drop out. But
Jim Gilmore.
I guess my money on the what we consider the A-teamers would be Chris Christie. Everyone else seems to have gotten a little bit better bump out of this last debate. I mean, Rubio had a pretty good debate. Bush had a pretty good debate. You know,
well, Kasich's been floundering a little bit too. So Kasich and Christie are sort of on the bottom end.
Yeah, I mean, Kasich's doing a little better in the polls than Christie. But you know, it's not going to be Trump. It's not going to be Fiorina. It's not going to be Carson. It won't be Cruz. You assume not Bush or Rubio. Rand Paul is probably in it for a movement run. So, you know, just like his dad, he'll stick around for maybe longer than the expiration date would show. I mean, it really just leaves Christie and Kasich. So I don't know. I guess maybe I'd say Christie.
Somebody's going to have to at some point be the moderate, the top moderate. And if the moderates keep splitting their votes, I mean, it's looking better for Ted Cruz.
Well, I took a quick added up the numbers today. We've had a couple of new polls since the debate. Donald Trump is down a little about 8 or 9 points in one, just down maybe half that in another, still in first place. But if you add up if you add up Trump, Fiorina, and Ben Carson, you're still at 48% of the people polled. So, you know, that's a dangerous number if you want to be an establishment candidate.
I sort of saw this coming after the last debate. There's a gladiator fight going on, basically, between Carly Fiorina and Donald Trump. And yep. The media loves it. We all love it. But I think they kind of end up killing each other and, the other guys rise.
Well, it'll be really interesting to see, it'll be really interesting to see between the others, you know, Bush and Kasich and Rubio and Christie, I guess the other moderates or the moderates maybe in the race, moderates as far as the Republican Party goes. It'll be interesting to see which of those has kind of a moment that lets those voters rally around someone. Well, unfortunately, we have lots of time left and a lot more polls. Although I guess eventually now we're going to get a nice break. And instead of talking about the Republicans, we do have a Democratic debate finally coming up.
Yeah. And things just keep getting worse and worse for Hillary Clinton. You know, what do you think the reaction was when they told her, oh, Mrs. Clinton, we found your emails? Great.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. Great. You know, it'll be interesting, though. I think that a debate could, and I could be completely wrong. I have been in the past. I think the debate might actually help her, though, in that it's going to be a debate. I would assume there will be multiple questions about the emails in this debate, but it'll be a chance for her to show her chops on actual policy issues instead of just answering questions about email. And, you know, a moment like that could kind of reset Democrats and say, okay, the emails concern me, but among the people on stage, we know it'll at least be Bernie Sanders. Among the people on stage, this is what we want to hear from our nominee. So maybe it could be a help. Or it could all go horribly wrong.
Yeah, it could. That could happen. Maybe we could get Biden. Maybe Biden will announce before the debate and then just rush into the debate. And that would be fun.
Biden unscripted?
Yeah.
That's always good. There have been two very distinct sides of the immigration debate among Republicans over the last few years. One that wants to increase border security, but then have a pathway to citizenship or at least legal status for millions of people who live in the U.S. after coming to the country illegally. And a harder line in the sand, which includes a continuous border wall and the possibility of mass deportations. Katrina Pearson is a Texas Tea Party activist and leader. She's also a spokesperson for the Tea Party Leadership Fund, and she's a go-to voice on Fox News on political matters, and she joins us now. Thanks, Katrina, for taking some time to talk with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You know, everyone's maybe it's just us in the media. It seems like everyone's very interested in this back and forth maybe between Republicans on where the party should be heading on immigration. Is it as big a deal to the Republican Party as it is to those on the outside reporting on it?
Well, I tend to think so, particularly as, you know, the Republican Party does have a platform which includes this very topic. And so sure there's going to be contention in the party. If you want to be the party that is, you know, supporting the rule of law, then there's an issue that we have going on in the Republican Party, because the immigration debate is one that tries to negate current law.
Katrina, we do hear a lot about the rule of law, but I sometimes wonder why we talk about lawlessness so much at the border, when I could take you or anyone else, I could walk out of this building I'm in right now and go and find plenty of undocumented immigrants working on construction sites, working in road crews. They're everywhere. Why aren't Republicans talking about cracking down on immigration in the workplace? We could have E-Verify. You know, in Texas, for example, Greg Abbott did not want to extend it to the private sector. We had a guy working at Church's Chicken who ended up being a major kidnapping figure in Juarez, Mexico. Why aren't we doing anything about, you know, that in the workplace?
Well, you know what, Jay? I think you just hit the point of contention within the Republican Party, because there are those of us who agree with you that we should be doing more at home to take care of the issue, and you have the politicians who want to really just point the finger and have the blame on the federal government, which, in fact, we can do things here. And, Jay, you might remember, for the last couple of years, the grassroots activists, the Tea Party groups in the state, have been challenging state lawmakers to do just that. I'm glad that Donald Trump has made this issue, put it out front, considering, you know, what's happened with Kate over in San Francisco, and really brought this issue to the top, because most of us on the grassroots side, on the people side, want our local politicians to do more to enforce, and Rick Perry pushed E-Verify through finally, but it should be extended to all employers, because we all know magnets are what makes them come to begin with.
You know, well, actually, though, I realize there have been some of you in your group and others who have pressured leaders, but you know, we just don't hear that much about it in the, either in the legislature or whatever. And my suspicion, really, and tell me where you think I'm right or wrong here, is that it's because the donors to the Republican Party do not want there to be any kind of crackdown in the workplace. I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, deporting people that are working and, you know, whether right or wrong, they're trying to feed their families. And these employers are taking these fake documents day in and day out. And there's really nothing even illegal about that, about what they're doing, because if they take those, as long as they have any document, then they're sort of in the clear. Why isn't the state of Texas or other states or the federal government doing anything about this? And why aren't the politicians saying more about that particular issue? And do you agree that it's because of this money going into the Republicans' pockets?
I agree with you 100%. You know, we have been shouting from the rooftops that you have those in the likes of the big donors, and Bob Perry in the past was a huge proponent of keeping illegals here and safe from being held under the law. And you also have a lot of those chamber individuals who rely on cheap labor. And we need to stop calling it cheap labor. This is exploitation. They are exploiting these illegal immigrants, using them for their wages. When these people get hurt, they don't take care of them. So this is exploitation, Jay. And that's exactly right. These politicians in Texas get elected by the big money, which is why you see this ongoing fight between the Republicans at the top and the people at the bottom, because we just can't compete with that kind of money. However, we have done a very good job over the last few cycles at turning out some of these people one by one. And now we're to a point where we're going to be able to go after even more.
So talk through with me a little bit more about the two sides on pathway to citizenship or pathway to legal status within the country. Where do you see the contention, or what's the real sticking point between the two sides on that? What is so wrong or so right about providing a way for someone to be legally here in the U.S.?
Well, I mean, this is a very big point of contention, and a lot of people like to say that, oh, well, they've been here so long, we should just go ahead and do that. When my side of the aisle says, you know what? The answer is no. They are not citizens. They did not do things the right way to begin with. So they shouldn't be awarded with U.S. citizenship, because there are a lot of people who to this day are still trying to become American citizens and do things the right way, even from across oceans. So we shouldn't be rewarding those here illegally with U.S. citizenship, because that is a very, very high level of expectation for this country. Now, when you look at, they say about 11 million, some people are projecting even 20 million. When we look at the social services system that I think everyone would agree is in trouble, when you start to pick and choose who gets citizenship and who doesn't when they didn't go through the appropriate path, we know that lawyers and the ACLU are going to try to expedite these processes. And a lot of people say, well, they can't get state benefits right now, but we all know that they do. What would that do to social services when we saw the expansion of Medicaid come up in Texas? It wasn't because Rick Perry wanted to be some strong conservative governor and not expand Medicaid. It was because they crunched the numbers, Jay. Medicaid expansion in the state of Texas would have bankrupted the state. So we're looking at a fiscal issue, not just a legal issue at that point when we talk about citizenship.
You talked about people being exploited, and there's no question about it that people are being exploited. And Texas being the only state that doesn't require workers' comp insurance, you have a lot of people that are just, they're dumped off at the county mm-hmm. hospital. They're in very desperate situations. And so because of that, I think that a lot of people have sympathy for them. So how do you avoid not demonizing the immigrant, and particularly if they're all going to be deported? They obviously want to stay here and work, or a lot of them do. So how do you, I mean, I think that's one of the things that where Republicans end up getting a lot of political blowback, is that the focus is on the immigrant and not so much on the people that are hiring them, because our message is, hey, don't come across, but if you do, we got a job for you. And by the way, it pays really low wages. But how do you avoid that political blowback?
Well, it's difficult to avoid. I'll give you one word. It's called access. You know, we have a media in the state of Texas that wants to maintain access to these state officials, including the governor. And so they don't talk about these points of contention that many on my side of the aisle push. They talk about the demonization, and they talk about, you know, how Republicans want to hurt immigrants, but they don't talk about how this issue is hurting Texans, how this issue is hurting our social services and hurting our financial system. And a lot of people, including myself, I mean, this is a horrible, horrible thing that is happening to a lot of these illegals who, you're right, are coming here to work and take care of their families. But if they get hurt and can no longer work ever, then their families are in real trouble. So we do push holding those folks accountable. And you may recall, we also brought up an initiative, I think it was in the 83rd legislature, where we tried to get the attorney general at the time, Greg Abbott, to look at construction sites in Houston, where the Mexican drug cartel is operating. Local news covered it. Not much of the state news covered it. But these are very serious issues happening in Texas because we have such a huge problem with illegal immigration. Those people are being exploited as well, but no one's talking about that. So what we've done, we tried to push the border compact bill this last legislative session that would, in fact, give local authorities more, let's just say, more guts to go out there and to do these things and to support our local law enforcement to try to get some of this under control at the state level. And as you know, that did not pass.
Let me ask you this. What would you do in this situation? There was you saw the woman in Houston who presented false identification and a fake Social Security number, which you can go to any flea market in Texas and get these documents. I'm not sure what her situation was with her kids, but let's just say that you have a situation like that where you have two parents who are undocumented and then their kids are citizens because they're born here. What do you do about that? Because if you deport the parents, what about the kids?
Well, I think that's why everyone is talking about the 14th Amendment. You know, how should we address these issues and how to go about clarifying that particular issue? And you know, the fact remains that these things are going to have to go through the court system. We have, the last couple of years, hundreds of thousands of illegals that have flooded across the southern border. 95% of them aren't even showing up for their hearings. So we have to start to put these people in the system, let them go to the court, tell their stories, and then decide in that route. I can't personally say, because I don't know what the circumstances are But I do believe each one of these cases should be looked at individually. And I know they say it's going to take 20 to 30 years to process all these people. And I just say, well, then we need to get started sooner rather than later.
So I would assume you're pretty happy with Ted Cruz's stance on immigration in this campaign. But how do you feel like the Republican Party field on whole is handling this issue?
Well, on whole, I mean, they're really not handling it. They are pandering. There's a lot of pandering going on to a constituency who isn't going to vote Republican. But we just need to focus on the facts and the rule of law and to put American citizens first. And I think that's what's really getting lost in translation. Everyone is focusing on the thoughts and feelings and outcomes for illegal immigrants, but not the thoughts and feelings of United States citizens. There are children in Oklahoma that want to go to the University of Texas, but there's preference given to illegals there who get to pay in-state tuition, might I add. And so we're not looking at the bigger picture and putting Americans first. And whether you agree with putting Americans first or not, everyone has their own opinion. But as the Republican Party and our platform, that's what we should be doing.
But there's no, and you, well, I guess you kind of already spelled this out with the idea of pandering to people that may not be voting Republican at all. But you don't see any concern with taking a line that, you know, different polls will say majority of Americans are maybe against?
No, I don't, because it really truly does depend on the polls that you look at. And, you know, many other polls that have been polling the general public want this issue addressed, particularly now that the light is being shown on what is happening. You know, when an American citizen, Jay, when they get arrested for weapons, for drugs, for murders even, we don't have a catch and release program in place for American citizens. Right now, April 20th, you can go back and look at the Senate subcommittee hearing on border security. And you will find that 40 pounds of marijuana can be brought across the border and nothing happens to these individuals. And we have teenagers, American teenagers, going to jail with felony penalties for having a joint, a small amount of marijuana. So there is a very serious issue that we have to start looking at, and we have to take a tougher stance on illegal immigration. And I will concede to you that if we had an open border situation, many people wouldn't oppose to it if we got rid of the welfare system, because you cannot keep a free society with both.
That's a very good point. I still would like to know, you know, when we're going to see whether it's Ted Cruz or Donald Trump or any of these politicians, these Republicans that are very pro that are very tough on immigration. I still don't hear a whole lot about what they're going to do about it in the workplace. I don't feel like that's a conversation that's being had. I certainly don't hear it in Texas. It just goes nowhere.
No, and I think the reason is because with the national election taking place, they're focused on the national issues. You know, we have definitely gone far and above and beyond with some of our state leaders, including Senator Cruz, to talk about those issues. But he's at a federal level as well. And so they're all focusing on the federal issue. But I can promise you this, the next cycle here in Texas, the grassroots, the folks on the ground, the people that I work with, will be pushing for more stringent punishment on and penalty for those folks, because it is the magnet that brings these people over here to come illegally, because they can't come legally. There isn't a way to do that. You're right. It's happening at the local level. We tried to get rid of in-state tuition. We tried to get E-Verify across the board. We tried to do a number of things to limit the number of magnets here to the state of Texas. We pressured Perry before he ran for president the last time. We said, look, Governor, Nikki Haley in South Carolina, Susana Martinez in New Mexico, both of these women signed bills getting rid of sanctuary cities in their state. And people left. And guess where they went? They came right here to Texas. And so we begged him to do the same, and he didn't. So we've got to get rid of sanctuary cities as well. And that's one of the things we're going to push again in the upcoming legislature.
Katrina Pearson is a Tea Party leader and frequent guest on Fox News. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, here's the straight ticket, the other side of the debate. The United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce held its annual national convention in Houston from September 20th through the 22nd. The event jumped into the national spotlight when protesters interrupted a speech by GOP presidential candidate Jeb Bush. Bush's speech didn't start off political at all.
It's good to be back in my former home in Houston.
The lunchtime event was supposed to be focused on honoring three female business leaders.
I'm particularly glad to be here in celebration of women entrepreneurs.
But Hispanic activists wanted the former Florida governor to answer questions about immigration policy. They interrupted his speech, chanting, "No hope without our vote."
Okay.
Mary Moreno is with the Texas Organizing Project, one of the groups that led the protest. She says they want to force a discussion on immigration reform on all presidential hopefuls. They zeroed in on Bush, not only because he was in Houston, but because she says he's trying to play both sides of the immigration debate.
He has been more reasonable on immigration in the past, but now he's sort of also being Trumpified, where he's trying to appease to that audience.
While some might brush off the protests as the action of a group that has no interest in supporting a Republican candidate anyway, Hispanic Republicans aren't too happy about the current rhetoric coming out of the GOP field either. Temo Muniz is chairman of the Texas Federation of Hispanic Republicans. He's also part of the Republican National Committee's Hispanic Engagement Initiative, which is aimed at growing the party's base.
Right now, our brand is toxic with the Hispanic community.
Muniz echoes the idea that Donald Trump has pushed immigration rhetoric in the wrong direction. He says several of the candidates tried to jump on Trump's ideas as a way to boost their own poll numbers. He fears many of those GOP candidates have given up on any outreach to Hispanics, even though he firmly believes Republicans can't win the White House without getting around 40% of that group's vote. In 2012, Mitt Romney won support from about 27% of Hispanic voters.
I wish that I could tell you that my party, the Republican Party, could show up to do the get out the vote effort in Nevada and New Mexico as the RNC, and they could send Republican operatives with elephant masks and knocking on doors in Spanish and doing. But that's not going to work. At this point, there's so much disgust that won't work.
But Muniz says he's started to see some pushback on the harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric from Florida Senator Marco Rubio and his favorite candidate, Jeb Bush. Back in Houston, Bush gave an example of that when answering protesters.
This is what I believe. As I've been consistently for the DREAM Act kids to get a path to citizenship. I've been consistently for it, and I'll continue to be consistently for it, irrespective of what the political ramifications of that are.
He also argued the U.S. doesn't need to build a wall or deport everyone in the country that's here illegally. He says the hundreds of billions of dollars it would cost is not a conservative, practical plan.
Finally, let me suggest to you that there are voices in my party that don't agree with any of this. Or some of it at least, the louder voices. And look, let me try to be, I don't want to create more of the food fight.
But so far in the GOP primary race, simply stating an opinion outside of the far right of the party is considered fighting words. And even as you hear this story, I would guess the food is already flying. That's it this week from The Ticket. For those of you keeping score at home, this is our 21st episode. So if you're new to the show, you might want to check out a few of our older episodes.
Want to know more about the campaign finance system? We've got an episode on that. Need to know more about any of the major presidential candidates, even some of the ones that are no longer with us? We've got you covered. And if you've ever wondered why Iowa gets to vote first, we've got a show to explain that too.
You can find us on iTunes. Just search The Ticket 2016. You can also find all of our shows and ways to subscribe by visiting our brand new website, theticket2016.com.
The Ticket is a co-production of KUT News and the Texas Tribune. Matt Largy is our editor. David Alvarez is our studio engineer. And our theme music is by Ben Root. Thanks for listening.